the main conversation for the day, especially looking at the oldest custom union in the world, that is SACCO, and also looking at Wandile Sinlombo. But let's look at my colleague, that is HD, especially who had the conversation with this chief economist and also presidential envoy, especially from South Africa. Yeah, HD, before we look at the conversation, what do you think is one thing that you can take out and one thing that you would like to inform the public, particularly looking at the conversation of SACCO and also the member state when it comes to prioritizing their own food production?
Yeah, it's just it's an interesting conversation in the sense that you know, we have this union that we call SACCO, like you said, is the oldest union in the world.
Yeah.
But there's now this friction sort of between the member nations.
Yeah.
Where they are saying, some of them, including Namibia, are saying,
yeah,
no, at some parts of the year, we don't want South African products. We don't want your South African products. We want to empower our own local industries. We want them to grow their own food. We want them to be self-sustaining themselves.
Yeah.
But now that's causing now the friction that I'm talking about between South Africa and the other SACCO members to say, like, for you to close your borders is against what we signed however many years ago.
Yeah.
So there's this now, this dilemma of upholding what we signed in SACCO and at the same time trying to boost our local value chains, activate our local value chains. And the conversation that I had with one dealer, he touched on this as well.
Yeah.
So he brought up some interesting points, which I'm sure we'll get to in just a few moments.
Indeed. Then we'll be able to discuss that, especially after listening to this interview.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We are joined by a very special guest that is none other than the all-knowing, that is Mr. Wandile Sinlombo, all the way from South Africa. Wandile, how are you doing this afternoon? And thank you very much for making time for us today.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate the opportunity to join this conversation.
100%. So let's get right into it. Today we'll be talking about the agricultural value chain. And South Africa is an example of an African nation that has fully engaged its entire agricultural value chain, as you very well know. So now, what we are here to discuss is, well, let's start with, are you for or against South Africa's neighbors achieving the same feat as South Africa has done when it comes to engaging its entire value chain?
I mean, look, our viewpoint is always that as the African countries, we should strive for shared prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
That means regarding in Namibia, Botswana, Kenya, elsewhere, it's all about how can we increase the agricultural productivity and be able to feed ourselves and the continent at large.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that can be achieved in a mutually exclusive way, as if one success could be a limitation to another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can be able to do these things and think about them in a concept of regional value chains,
yeah,
and saying how do we leverage each other's strongest points in that journey.
100%. And now, speaking of these strongest points, you know, we know that South Africa feeds a lot of nations on the continent. So we'd like to hear from you, what would the economic impact of South Africa's neighbors permanently closing the borders to certain imports? So in other words, can we quantify the economic value of South Africa's exports to its neighbors?
I mean, look, when you think about where South Africa sends its agricultural products and what's the activity looking like with the neighbors, what is clear is that about half of South Africa's agricultural exports go to the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the African continent, you can further segment that and say where, and it's clear that 90 cents, for example, in every dollar that is exported is really within the closest neighboring countries.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone just to get a sense about how much South Africa earns in agricultural exports a year, I mean, it's fairly substantive because it's about $15.1 billion last year.
Yeah.
So it's no small cent of that. But if then the neighboring countries were over time to see a bit of an improvement in their agricultural production, you would see a bit of a shift of those products from the countries in the region and perhaps maybe going more to other parts of the world, which is a conversation that South Africa has been having about advancing agriculture exports to the Middle East, to mm-hmm. Asia, and many other parts of the world, because there is a recognition that over time, some of the markets in the region and the other countries will see an improvement in production and they won't be needing some of the products that they would have ordinarily gotten from South Africa.
100%. And, you know, speaking of these markets, in a recent article that you published, you wrote that, you said, we believe the best approach to accelerating agricultural development is to lean on the farm technologies that South African agribusiness can offer. This was now in regard to the governor of the Bank of Botswana, who made a call basically to reduce, you know, imports from South Africa. So if you can, for our listeners, expand on this thought. Is relying on South Africa truly the best or only approach for nations such as Botswana and Namibia?
I mean, I think Botswana, Namibia, and other countries in the region can really rely on whatever country they can actually get the products more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that between South Africa and Botswana and the others, I mean, if we were to go on a basic commercial sense, no one is doing each other a favor. South Africa is not doing neighbors a favor. I know that South Africans, they have a sense when they speak that, oh, we are providing food supplies. You are not.
Yeah.
You are engaging in commerce because a consumer in Namibia is paying for your product,
yeah,
just like a consumer in China is paying. And I think that there needs to be an appreciation there that no one is a big brother to the next.
Mm-hmm.
The Namibians in Botswana will buy products in South Africa if they can get them at,
yeah,
better quality and at affordable price.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that given the unemployment situation in some of our neighboring countries, and also the fact that over time there's not going to be a heavy reliance only on mining, they have to be thinking about how do they explore the rural economy to its fullest extent, which is why then for me I always thought it's good that Namibia and Botswana engage on increasing their agricultural production.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I was against on was the fact of the arbitrary closures of the borders, because it introduces two aspects in here. One, it is against the spirit of the Southern African Customs Union, as well as the African Continental Free Trade Area. Secondly, it has the inflationary pressures in the near term for the consumers in both of the countries. And I think also that what we rather than should be thinking about is to say, what technologies can we get out of South Africa,
mm-hmm,
that can actually assist in Botswana, in Namibia, Mozambique, and many other countries increasing their agricultural practices. Not that South Africa holds the answers to anything, because, I mean, until you walk into South Africa and you realize that it is a country of two agricultures, it has its own disparities.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it has segments that have a best practices at which could be applied, as well as their agribusinesses that can actually provide the technologies that is needed. So my viewpoint was that instead of just randomly closing borders, we should be thinking of a way of saying, how do we have a systematic way so that there is that shared prosperity, no matter then how it's defined and how we are beginning to think about it. But I think the friction that is there and the unpredictability is something for me that I feel that it's holding us back.
Mm-hmm. And so now, speaking of this shared prosperity, do you foresee any scenario where, you know, where the SACU members can work in tandem to reach a point where each member, you know, has its own booming agriculture industry capable of not only feeding itself, but exporting products to the rest of the continent via now the free trade area, the free trade agreement?
I mean, I think that's the only way that this has to happen, because the challenge with this is that if you have one country being the most dominant player over others, it introduces all of the resentment that you get to see. Mm-hmm. Because now you will have the African Continental Free Trade Area, then you will have South Africa in the south being the most dominant player, and perhaps also over time Zambia. Then you have in the Maghreb region all of these countries, Egypt, Tunisia, and many others. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that actually lands us into a healthy space, because over time other countries will look into this and begin thinking that at the end of the day, we are not actually getting any better into this arrangement. Then it brings back the old problems of difficulties. So my sense is that we should be thinking about that. And I mean, even for South Africa, it's actually a nice hedge in times of crisis to ensure that you can get certain produce from Zambia, you can get certain produce from Namibia and the others. It's mm-hmm. not a bad idea to ensure that your neighbors actually grow. And then I think it is at that stage where then we can begin thinking about Southern Africa's food systems, and then we could be the ones collectively as a region that are thinking about how do we export produce to China, to Vietnam, and all of these other countries. I think we really have to be thinking quite seriously mm-hmm. about that approach instead of all of the fights.
So, you know, speaking now of these fights, in all the analysis that you do, in your personal view, Do you foresee this friction getting worse, or do you foresee a more positive outlook in this regard?
No, I think it will be more positive. I mean, people like ourselves, I write a lot about these things to agitate people. Mm-hmm. And of course, I have to write in a ways that sometimes are critical and more direct, so that you can haunt people, because you cannot. This thing is very important. Mm-hmm. And given the seriousness of it, we cannot be talking about it in a velvet gloves type of an approach, because then it will look like it's not urgent. Yeah. It is urgent. And I do think that the issue here is not only also about South Africa, and it's about also the governments, the government of Botswana, the government of Namibia, of Lesotho, and many others, also being open to certain seed cultivars, technologies, improving mm-hmm. land governance, because there's a lot that they need to do themselves. It's not that they are being done things by outsiders also. Mm-hmm. Similarly, with the businesses in South Africa, beginning to think about how then they can provide the necessary seeds, the necessary agrochemicals, the necessary inputs to the countries in our region, as well as the shift in thinking. Because this idea that if you are sitting in Europe, you are a consumer, but if you are sitting in the African continent, you are done a favor, you are provided food. That's not the same thinking. I mean, the countries that are buying produce, either it's Namibia or Botswana, they are paying the same price as if you are sitting in Europe. Exactly. So that respect for consumers is important, because I tend to find that in a psyche, perhaps maybe in some in South Africa, they tend to see European and the other countries as markets, and then others as if they are assisting. But that's not the case here.
100%, and that's a very interesting point that you bring up. And now my last question for you, you briefly touched on just now about governments being open to new seed producers and so on. In a recent piece, you wrote that it's important for African governments to ease the regulations and permit imports and cultivation of genetically engineered maize crops and other products. So in Namibia, you know, much of the community is against genetically engineered products or GMOs. So if you had the opportunity now to sit with whether it's a Namibian farmer or a decision maker in the agriculture industry in Namibia, what would you say to them to convince them to make use of these genetically engineered products? Why should they opt for these products?
I mean, at a most elementary level, I would make two points. One, that we are seeing the effects of climate change, and they are not getting better mm-hmm. Anytime. Therefore, if we want to adapt and make sure that the farmers have the best chance of getting better yields, we have to see what's happening in technology. And now the even better position is that we have well passed the aspects of the old school genetically modified seeds. We are now on a new genetic techniques. You are not introducing anything new in the seeds, but you are tweaking the genetics so that the seeds withstand the environment. So it's on that. The second aspect is about, we want to get the best yield in an area. it's not okay, the fact that if you are farming in South Africa, you are able, for example, to get 6, 7, and even 10 tons per hectare. But if you are in any other country in Africa, you can get like 1.5 tons per hectare of maize. So we need to see a bit of an improvement on that. So it's a yield gain. Mm-hmm. It's adaptation to technology. But there's a sensitive thing which people always say on who owns the seeds. And I think that's the conversation that needs to be had with the technology suppliers and the seed companies, of saying, look, people do not take these because they are also worried about the ownership of these products and what relationship we can enter into as governments, research organizations of the nation countries, as well as the global seed providers. And I think we have to find ourselves into that rather than sitting on the side and say we don't want anything.
Yeah. 100%. Mr. Wandile, thank you very much for your time. I know you are a very busy man. We appreciate your insights greatly.
Thank you so very much for having me on.
Thank you.